addressing stuff, people say, hey, these 60 emails on these days when these people would be there, who's funding them?
Yes, but you're going to get me those.
How's it rolling? I mean, I'll start this one.
Because that's probably not how long it's going to take, because I don't have a lot of time to get these for the days. I mean, I would do this, so you get that.
Let me just start over again. I'll call case number 18-60018, Garden Oaks Maintenance Organization, Inc. We'll take appearances, please.
I apologize, Your Honor. Johnny Patterson for the debtor. I stepped out for a second.
All good.
Charles Rubio on behalf of the committee.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rubio. Gentlemen, where are we?
Real quick, if you'll let me. I can do this.
Sir,
I can do this in 2 minutes.
All right.
We've hit a snag, and we have a legal issue that we need some guidance on.
Okay.
That I think with the resolution of this, we're 90% there to a joint plan that we were going to submit. And the issue is that the debtor believes that pursuant to the plan of reorganization, we can have approved binding amended deed restrictions that will be filed in the real property records pursuant to the solicitation, voting, and approval process of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
The committee believes that because the voting requirements are different than required in the property code, that if we were to do that, those amendments would not be binding on the homeowners of tomorrow. And we agreed, and that's quite frankly where we are hung up in drafting this plan, because the debtor is looking for a final resolution, get everything taken care of in one fell swoop, and having confirmation of a plan that results in approval of the deed restrictions and the filing and enforcement. I think the committee wants that also, but they are right now unwilling to sign on to a plan that has that process built in to the bankruptcy voting process, if that makes sense. Does that
it
make
does.
Sense? All right. So we agreed to ask the court if that's, I guess I got to ask it in the right way or this doesn't come across well. I guess it would be the trustee has objected that it is legally not a confirmable plan and would ask the court to find that it's, as a matter of law, we could never confirm it and would instruct us to kind of move in a different direction, and the debtor would take the opposite position, and we'd ask the court today to kind of give us some guidance.
All right. So first of all, just for the record, I think you said the trustee, you meant the committee.
Yes, I'm sorry.
All right. Mr. Rubio, do you disagree or want to supplement the statement that was made?
Coming from the committee's perspective, and
sure.
Part of the reason why we're here is because the procedural way of doing the last amendment wasn't done correctly. So we have a concern that if we try to short-circuit anything with respect to getting new amendments approved and we try to short-circuit that process, then we're potentially repeating history here. So under the Texas Property Code, it requires 67% of lot owners to approve an amendment. At the last go-around, we didn't even get 67% of those people to actually vote on a plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're under that number just in terms of voting. So the debtor's approach is that if we put them in a class, they're subject to the proceeding, and that we don't have to meet the threshold requirements of the Texas Property Code. Under 1129A3, we have to meet the underlying Texas law. We wouldn't be able to abrogate that. But, that is the fundamental issue here as to what is the scope of the court's authority to actually enter in amendments of the deed restrictions without complying with the procedure set forth under the Texas Property Code. And so we're coming in from that. On this one discrete issue, we have a difference. But really on all the other terms, I think we're...
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Yes.
All right. So, given the state of the law in the circuit, Would you agree that if structured the right way, is that consent can come, or an affirmative vote can actually come in the form of a failure to exercise your right to say no?
In some context, with respect to Chapter 11 plan voting, that mm-hmm. might be the case. The Texas Property Code has
so,
other...
So, let me start over.
Sure. Okay.
So, I know what the Texas Property okay. Code says. I've also done this uh-huh. as a lawyer. And so, what I'm engaging is, I'm not asking you for you to educate me as to what you think the law says. I already know what it says.
Okay.
And I'm not... that sounds arrogant. I don't mean it that way. It's just I've been through this process. I know what can happen and what can't happen. So, and again, I didn't mean that to sound arrogant. It sounded horrible. What I'm asking for is I want you to think through this process. So, do you think that you can craft a provision in the context of a bankruptcy plan that can constitute an affirmative vote for implementing and binding someone's property going forward?
There is a way we could do that. I mean, we could do it by doing a consent and sending it out as part of a plan and having them submit it. So it could be part of a plan.
So let me just draw an example for you. So. We know who the current owners are now, correct?
That's correct. We can, yes. Right.
And so, do you think, I mean, do you agree that as part of a bankruptcy plan, something could be sent to every homeowner that says this condition is being impressed upon your property unless you stand up and say no? I'll tell you the answer to the question, despite the fact that many of your clients say no. The answer is absolutely you can.
Okay. All right. And so this is something that Mr. Patterson and I discussed, which was that perhaps at some point we need specific guidance on this in order to reach this result.
Well,
right?
here's the thing, and you draw this from a number of ways, and I want to be very careful because I'm not in any way trying to tell you how you should draft a plan or not. I don't think that would be appropriate for me to do. But let me try and give you an example of how far I think you can go. So let's take the example of a Chapter 9 case. Only easier because I've got a geographically constrained governmental entity with property owners within those boundaries. That's the only reason I'm picking that. A lot of the rules in Chapter 11 are applicable in Chapter 9. Agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. And so in a plan, I don't think it's subject to genuine dispute that you can impress upon every property owner in a Chapter 9. You can encumber property with an obligation.
Okay.
I'll just tell you that isn't genuinely subject to dispute.
Okay.
And so reason through with me is that if that is true, why can you not then implement the same type of burden with what you all are contemplating?
So, for example, let me just run by one example with
sure.
you. So, one example of an amendment that we're contemplating having imposed on these landowners is an amendment to the amendment provision itself. So, right now, it would require 67% of lot owners to approve an amendment.
Right.
After this, we'd want just a simple majority, 50% plus one, mm-hmm. right? That type of amendment, I don't know if you can do something where you can impose that without getting the affirmative consent of 67% of owners to do something like that.
So let's assume that that's right. I am not aware, and you may know this, you may educate me. I am not aware of anything in the Texas Property Code that defines what affirmative consent is. Are you?
I believe there are express provisions on how you have to return a consent, and they call it a consent under the Texas Property Code.
That wasn't how you have... I wasn't asking that. I was asking what constitutes an affirmative consent.
I believe there...
Can I tell you I consent? Do I have to put it in writing? Do I have to deliver it by certified mail? Do I have to personally serve it?
I believe it has to be in writing and you have to sign it.
Okay.
Similar to a ballot in bankruptcy.
That's exactly why I'm headed in that direction. So tell me why it is that you can't incorporate this same type of approach into a plan that has to do with these, that incorporates these provisions.
Well, I don't know of anything even under the code that allows you to take affirmative votes from possibly non-voters, if that's what you're suggesting.
Well, sure it is. I mean, it's the whole body of law with third-party releases. What constitutes consent? That's the whole opt-in versus opt-out argument, right?
You know, there is. In those cases, those people receive a ballot, and the issues are whether they, you know, have to opt in or opt out. I mean, that's right. But I don't think that in order to have an accepting class, they still have to return a ballot and have it signed. No.
You're mixing concepts here. Let's step back. So you understand, or do you understand the case law out of the circuit as it stands today with respect to third-party releases?
I don't know what the status is of third-party releases in the circuit, whether it's an opt-in or opt-out.
The issue is that in order to for a third-party release in bankruptcy to be valid, you have to have consent. Right?
That makes sense.
Okay. And so the whole issue in all the recent cases has become, what is consent? And there are two primary theories that are advanced. One was opt-in, which means you have to affirmatively check the box that says, yes, I agree. Second theory, which is much easier to obtain, says you are deemed to have consented unless you say no. And the circuit, and I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but the circuit has said that the second is entirely permissible and we do it every day. The question is, that I'm asking you all, is why can that not apply to what it is you all are trying to do? I think there are actually multiple ways to get there.
There are certainly multiple ways to get there.
Yeah. So let me also suggest or ask the question, do you all actually have to resolve this question now?
If we want, take a step back. The answer is yes and no. The goal, it depends on our goal. Our goal, ours being mine and Mr. Rubio's and the committee and the board, is to be able to produce a single plan that goes out to the neighborhood for voting. That's our goal.
I got it.
So if that's our goal, then the answer to your question is yes, because we've worked this very hard, and I've been referring to it as the process. Hmm. We have a process that the board wants, has instructed me to kind of stay on, that solves many of the, if not all of the neighborhood problems through this amendment process. Mm. We want to get it done, and the committee. So anyway, I don't want to suggest anything, but the answer is yes, because our goal is to have a joint plan.
Okay. So if you include in your plan all of the language that implements whatever it is that you all have agreed to.
Right.
I mean, one approach is to simply take the third-party release approach and include in your ballot a consent form, which is what is typically done. And you simply, I mean, obviously it's a due process issue, but I know of nothing that would prohibit this process from binding landowners.
Right.
So long as you give an opportunity to say, no, it doesn't bind me.
Right.
And I think what matters is the language that you put into your consent form. I mean, it needs to tell people, because you're dealing with people's property.
Right.
And you need to make it very clear so that it's easy to read, not lawyer language, but something that's very short and clear. Could even be, I hate to say a separate form, because then you have to worry about things getting separated. But you can incorporate it into a ballot, send it out to folks, and you know, I actually think that you can get there on a deemed consent issue if you want to go through. I mean, you're going to get findings, and you're going to get ultimately what you hope is an order and a judgment, and you do that.
Right.
And, you know, can I give you 100% assurance of anything? I mean, no. I mean, I can only give you finality to the extent that, you know, someone with, you know, a higher pay grade than me says that I'm wrong. But I think that if you get finality and the appellant periods run and everybody had a chance to object, I mean, the argument that about a future owner is, it doesn't move me a whole lot, because you're going to do this the right way and you're going to record everything in the real property records, and anyone that would subsequently buy the property is going to buy with notice of the finality of this process.
Right.
And so long as the process isn't flawed, it's hard for me to understand how someone isn't bound. Now, I would understand an argument as to a future owner if it isn't there for them to discover. I mean, if it isn't in the real property records, but, I mean, deed restriction, I mean, you're going to do this the right way. You're going to record the deed restrictions. You're going to reference the bankruptcy courts. You might even decide to record confirmation order, all of which
Correct.
You can do. And, again, it's just a pure due process issue in terms of giving people an opportunity to stand up and say no. You know, the issue that you have to worry about is what happens if someone shows up, says no, makes the arguments as part of the confirmation process.
Right.
I mean, I can't predict that. I mean, you've got to go, you know, all you can do is to do the best you can, and then you see what happens, and then you have to react. But I don't know why you can't craft a process that is entirely consistent with Title 11 and is also consistent with the property code.
So going back to your question about if this is necessary as part of the plan, it's only necessary because the board has wants it, right?
Then it's necessary. I was just trying to understand where it was coming from.
Right.
As far as like resolving the Chapter 11 case and leaving the case, we could confirm a plan. We have a confirmable plan, we believe, that we filed that doesn't need to amend the deed restrictions. That's just like gravy. That would be not a nice to have.
Right.
But we could leave this case with a HOA intact that's collecting a mandatory fee, and that can live on another day and take the time and do a process that's typically done under Texas Property Code to get an amendment in place. That
I'm not going to opine on. The people who live in the subdivision, who own property there, and the lawyers, you know, you all can work that out. I'm not going to tell you what plan to file. All
sure.
I am going to tell you is I am 95% confident, and I mean that's as confident as I ever am of anything. I am 95% confident that if you want, you can accomplish this. The issue that I think you all have to decide is, do you want to? And if you don't want to, shouldn't do it.
Well, I'll say this. We do want to solve as many problems as we can, but we also don't want to create problems, right? And so we don't, like I said at the beginning, we don't want to repeat history and do something that would be technically deficient under the Texas Property Code that's susceptible to challenge. And so we are open in order to find a way forward that makes sense, that is a long-term solution that's not subject to challenge. And that we would certainly be open to that. And, you know, that's we had proposed one iteration of a plan that included a consent. We have this plan that contemplates that an amendment would go out afterwards. But we would, and if we can do it right now, we would do it. And one thing that Mr. Patterson and I discussed was possibly just going in front of someone like Judge Isger and just presenting the issues that are confronting us as far as like these technical requirements, to see if he could just call balls and strikes and tell us, you know, what he thinks, or someone else like that would just tell us, you know, if it would be deficient and subject to challenge, then we shouldn't do that. But, you know, if it actually resolves issues rather than creates issues, then, you know, then we should do it.
I mean, I'm not going to tell you that you can or you can't do that. What is it that, this is a genuine question, what is it that you're asking me to do? I've told you I think you can do it. I mean, I think it would be inappropriate for me to say, okay, let's pull out the plan. I'll start giving you language that I would be willing to go prosecute right, if I were the lawyer. But I can't do that. And so, I mean, if you want to go see Isger, by all means, go see him. I mean, he's the guy that taught me. I mean, you know, if you want to see what he has to say about it, fine by me. I mean, you know, you do get a different view. I mean, he is more conservative than I am. That's entirely up to you.
I think it might be helpful to the process.
It's not really what we talked about, but what we're asking you to do, we agreed to do this and maybe get an answer and then act on that. So we're going to need another hearing. What we're going to do is, and what's going to happen is, we're going to come with two plans or one, right? And we're done. I mean, we're going to keep working, but we've got to come to resolution. So
what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So I said I wasn't going to tell you what to do, and I'm not going to do that. I would highly discourage you from doing two plans.
Oh, that's the last thing that we want.
If you have concerns that I'm just wrong, and lots of people think I'm wrong. Yeah, everyday people think I'm wrong.
It's not an issue of being wrong. It's an issue about the process, right? Like why would we?
Well, no, it is an issue because if I'm right and you follow the process, then you don't have anything to worry about. But I think you got to do two things, I've actually thought about this an awful lot. I know I joke around a lot, but I actually think through things fairly deeply. I think you have to decide first if you want to do it. And if you don't want to do it, you'll just stand up and say, no, I don't want to do it.
I mean, I think we're fine going forward with the Second Amendment plan.
That's different, though, Mr. Rubio. Being fine about something is very different than either wanting to do it or not wanting to do it. I think you got to decide if you want to do it or not. If you decide that you want to do it, but you're worried about the outcome, then put in place the structure that you both agree is the best that you can put forward. Go out, get your vote, get your consents, see what happens. And, I mean, you're never going to bother me if you come in at confirmation and say, the committee supports the plan but has decided that it does not support the approval of amended deed restrictions.
Yeah, we want to go forward with our plan. We will do that. And if we want to supplement it with amendments to the deed restrictions, we can supplement it with amendments to the deed restrictions.
Okay, so I get it. You're not listening to me. Fair enough. I tried three times. Fair enough. What is it that you would like from me today?
What's today? I've even lost track of today. Today we need a hearing. We're gonna have an amended plan, and we need to talk about solicitation. So we'll need an order because solicitation will be significantly different than the first round. And so we'll I would like a hearing in about 2 weeks that would allow us to have our plan on file, either joint or single, and ask the court to approve the solicitation method and
so
material.
So let me ask you this. Is it conceivable that what you're going to do is ask me for a process that would involve sending out two plans?
It's possible. It appears to me today that is a possibility.
I mean, it's not fair to the homeowners.
It's not.
I mean, you guys figure out a way to make this work. This is, you guys are charging thousands of dollars.
Sure, a lot of money.
And the folks who are going to be asked to sit down and make decisions about their future don't need to read 400 pages of legal jargon. What they need to read is a five-page summary of here's what your options are. But I'm happy to give you a hearing. So, Mr. Rubio, 2 weeks work for you?
We're back to the I would suggest longer just to make sure that, one, we could meet with someone and resolve this. I mean, we are actually working, I think, from the same document at this point. So I think we could
tell
do
me what. Tell me what you want.
I think we could do it in 30 days.
Today's the 9th, so you're thinking sometime first part of June?
June 7th.
7th is a Corpus Christi day. How about the 6th?
6th, perfect.
In the afternoon. And I won't be overloaded like I was today.
Well, that's a lot of my fault, and I apologize.
June 6th?
That's what I was offering. If that doesn't work, I'll find another day.
6th works.
So why don't we say 2 o'clock, June the 6th.
Yes.
And that is a hearing to consider approval of either a joint disclosure. Well, you ought to have a joint disclosure statement anyway,
Well, we have an approved a conditionally approved disclosure statement, and so just procedurally, I've been saying that it just makes sense to have them join our plan so we don't have to go through that. Jump through those hoops again.
But different issue.
So,
even if we have separate plans, why can we not have a single disclosure statement?
Absolutely.
That simply talks about both plans.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, again, I'm coming back to where I was. So, what I would see on the 6th is either a disclosure statement to approve a joint plan or a joint disclosure statement and a solicitation process for two plans. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
I got it.
I want to make sure
I'm not surprised.
That's it.
And if you want to go, if you want to go get Isger, Isger will require an order from me. If he's willing to do it, and I don't know that he will be, but if you can get him to do it, just upload an order. I don't need a motion. I'll sign it. Yeah, I mean, if he can be helpful to this process, I'm all for it, because there are a whole lot of people that need answers to all of this, and we need to put this behind everyone and move on.
Right. That's it, Judge.
That's it.
And okay, I really appreciate you staying. And
No. I've had a lot of folks talking through this with us.
So.
I mean, there are a lot of folks in the audience that got to be frustrated at this point.
Yes.
Anybody want to ask a question? Come on up.
Come on.
Good afternoon.
My name is Kathy Land, and I live in the neighborhood.
Okay. You said Ms. Hand?
Kathy Land.
Oh,
L-A-N-D.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't hear you. Thank you.
The question I have is, how did we move from, I thought the creditors committee was supposed to represent the creditors. Now we're talking about something that involves the whole neighborhood, not just the creditors. So how did this come from Gomo filing bankruptcy into now it has come into a matter of updating the deed restrictions and things that four people that are on the creditors committee are fixing to agree to something that's going to they're agreeing for the whole neighborhood.
They're actually not agreeing on behalf of the whole neighborhood. So you made a number of statements that simply aren't true. So let me try and work back through those. So first of all, a committee doesn't agree on behalf of anybody other than the creditors committee.
Okay.
They are statutorily responsible for representing the interest of all of their constituents. And I use a different word than you do, because constituents includes things other than just pure creditors. So I use the word constituents to cover weird situations like the one that exists in this case. It is possible that every homeowner in the entire neighborhood is a creditor. It's possible that some are and some aren't, which is why I use the word constituent. The issue about deed restrictions is not one. The creditors committee cannot agree to a set of deed restrictions on behalf of anyone. What the committee can agree to is a process by which people who are affected have a chance to vote. That's all the committee can do.
Of course.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It does make sense. It's just that I don't understand how just this little handful of people can represent 1,400 people, and they don't even check with what they want.
Sure.
So they don't even know.
Yeah, they don't, unfortunately or fortunately, depending upon your point of view, they don't have to. So let me give you a good example. So, you know, I'm going to try to give something that hopefully will have no correlation to this case. So I have a big coal mining case that I'm currently trying to work through. And I've got thousands of workers who are affected. You can imagine being a coal miner, what all of the issues you've got. You've got health issues, you've got pension issues, you've got different owners and responsibilities to different people and from different people. And of course, I can't bring 150,000 retired coal miners into this courtroom and start figuring out one by one whether they agree to something or whether they don't, and the chances of ever getting something done or even to consider are impossible, right? Because the moment that person two wants to change something, I then got to go back to person one to see if they agree to it. So in that case, there is one person who speaks for them. And that person can't commit them to anything. I simply get their views about whether something makes sense or not. And then once I come to a final landing place after hearing from everybody, then something goes out to all those 150,000 people to say whether they agree or disagree. So it's not that that one person, or in this case this group of people, bind anybody to anything. The assumption under the bankruptcy code is that their interests are closely enough aligned that when I hear from them, I start to hear common concepts. It doesn't always work, but that's the theory behind it. And so just like in the coal mining case, I have one person who's not a coal miner, but she's really smart, and she gets up and she makes arguments and she tells me, well, Judge, you shouldn't consider this, you should consider this, I think this is a good idea, I think that's a bad idea. But at the end of the day, she doesn't even get a vote. She simply gets to make a recommendation. Same on the committee. The committee doesn't actually have a vote on anything. The committee members, to the extent that they have claims or are landowners and that sort of thing, they get to cast votes as individuals. But the committee itself doesn't vote. The committee can recommend, the committee can object, but the committee doesn't get to vote. And at the end of the day, when I tally everything up, I don't consider the committee. I consider the individuals, but not the committee itself.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's fine. It's just that there are so many people in the neighborhood
mm-hmm.
that have been, I mean, it's like ever since Gomo was elected in 2002,
okay.
it started a process in the neighborhood of conflict, and people, there has been no peace since they took over. And then finally, they get their own selves into trouble. It's their time to mm-hmm. get themselves out of bank. They filed bankruptcy. I don't know why, but then they can get out of it. But now it's like by some way they have brought this around to not only remain in power, but the new deed restrictions that they are proposing gives them twice as much power over the neighborhood. They are going to change it to where a handful of people can show up at a meeting and they can, 50% of a select group that shows up would mm-hmm. be able to make decisions for 1,400 people. So there are so many people that are against this, but they are so sick of Gomo that when Gomo sends out anything, even like this new plan,
right.
they're not going to have any, they won't have anything to do with it. And of course, nobody could understand the plans that were sent out, the plans that they sent out. People just said, oh yeah, I'm going to get around to reading it. No, because it was voluminous.
Too
they couldn't understand it. They didn't, it overwhelmed them.
Okay.
And so the people, they just know, it's another Gomo ploy. They won't participate. So there are so many people. Thank goodness it is set where they have to get the votes. They have to get 67% of the people say that, yes, we want you to continue. Let them try to get that, because the majority, I am telling you, you don't hear from the majority in the neighborhood
right.
that does not want them. That's all I have to say.
Well, let's talk about that, because
okay.
you can actually be helpful. And I have encouraged a lot of your neighbors who have showed up at the hearings in front of me to be helpful. Some have been, some haven't. It's the right as an American to do that, and I respect that. So included in what you say, or in what you told me, there are all sorts of different issues bouncing around, and it's not an all or nothing type thing. So, and you have to understand my role. I can't tell the lawyers what to do in terms of what they propose to me and what not to do. And I got to give you sort of one point of reference. You know, I have filed 100 more plans than these two lawyers put together. That's how old and that's how much and that's how long I've done it. But I can't tell them what to do in terms of what they propose. All I can do is rule on what is given to me. Your voice can be heard, and I think, and I don't remember who comes to these hearings and who doesn't, so I don't know how many of these you've been to and how many you haven't. But if you've been to them all, you know, I think you've heard me more than once say that we were going to, that everybody was going to work together to try and bring an end to this and to try to bring peace, or I wasn't going to pay anybody. You know, we were going to figure out a way to address this because a home is important. You have a powerful voice, and if there are things that you like and things that you don't like, and I guess I should ask, are you on the committee?
No.
Okay, all right. But you know who is, and those folks have an obligation not to follow what you say, but they have an obligation to consider what you say. And if they take a direction that is different than what you think is right, there will be a hearing where you can, I give everyone the opportunity to come up. You can vote no. You can file an objection to it. You can do all sorts of things. But I have to get something. You know, you can't start shooting at something until we actually have something for you to shoot at, if that makes sense. And I have, for what, 5 or 6 or 7 months, I've been pushing the lawyers to try and do something different than what they've done, because I know what this ought to look like. And again, I'm not trying to sound arrogant. I just know.
Our system will end this conference in 5 minutes. To extend this open effort, your conference has been extended for 60 minutes.
So I know what this ought to look like. I just can't draft the plan. And, you know, when I talk in court, I never talk for the sake of talking. I send messages to people and the things that I say. While I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm also talking to the lawyers. Now, they often choose not to listen. Mr. Rubio excels at that. But he also gets the right to do that because he's a very fine lawyer, and I can just be wrong. But I send all sorts of messages to people that, you know, people either listen to or they don't, and they're certainly welcome not to listen to it. But at the end of the day, what I have to have is I have to have a process. And I have to have a process that allows people to come in and complain. And this is the way your Congress decided that the process should go, i.e. formation of a creditors committee, a debtor, the adversarial process, the confirmation process. Yeah, that's the law we all have to live by. That may not make you feel warm and snuggly at night in terms of that process, but I will tell you this. I will, and I hope even people that disagree with what I've done thus far, I hope that everyone will absolutely agree that I follow the law. I do what I think the law says, and if I get it wrong, somebody will correct me upstairs. I try not to have that happen. I care a lot about what happens to the cases that are in my court, and I work really hard. There aren't many other judges that would spend this much time trying to get people to listen to them. You know, if I were doing simply the job I took an oath to do, I would go, all right, guys, file it, and I wouldn't say a word. And when I got to it, I'd run down the statutory language, and I'd go, yep, you win, you lose, you win, you lose. And that's what I would do. But, you know, I live in the city of Houston. I live in the state of Texas. And that means an awful lot to me. I was in New Orleans earlier this week. The chief judge of the circuit is retiring. He's like way above me. He's just below the Supreme Court. And I got invited to a dinner, and I'm talking to a couple of Fifth Circuit judges, and again, way above me. And he asked me the question. He said, why are all Texans so arrogant? And I looked at him. I said, it's not a hard question. He said, what do you mean? I said, because we were a country long before we were a state, and we care about one another. And he actually bought me a tequila and left me alone the rest of the night. But, I mean, that is genuinely how I feel. And so, you know, I don't know what the lawyers are going to do. I don't know what the debtor's going to do. I don't know what the committee's going to do. But you can have your voice heard, and if there's something that you like or don't like, make your views known. And you're certainly going to have a day in the future in front of me, assuming that the lawyers are able to propose something, or even if they can't get on the same page. You're going to have a day where you can come in and you can walk through this. And, you know, I like paragraphs 1 and 3. I hate 2. You're going to have that day. Okay?
Okay.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else coming up? Yes, it's good evening now, and I do apologize.
Sue Schmidt. I'm a resident. I was on the committee. No longer.
You were on the committee, but
we're
no
on
longer.
The good okay. Not anymore.
Okay.
I have been asking for the past longer than this, but at least 6 weeks to 2 months,
mm-hmm.
for where we are financially in terms of the $700,000.
Okay.
And what we have, where we stand as to what the creditors could gain. And being part of the plan that the creditors might receive something, I think it's important for them to know what's been spent of that $700,000. And so I'm just wondering if you can urge the board to release those numbers.
So let me ask you a couple of things. Number one, it's going to be a really hard thing to figure out, because if you remember what I did is I didn't pay the committee lawyer. I told everybody I was going to wait and see what happened, because I want to see something positive done for the neighborhood. If I don't feel like something positive got done for the neighborhood, I'm not paying anybody, and I have that discretion. So that might be a little hard to figure out, but let me ask Mr. Patterson, when was the last MOR filed?
I don't know. I have them. I do know that Ms. Parks, I have all of them. I think there may be two. One, I know that I need to file, maybe two, but I have them, and I can file them in the morning. But they should be within one of being current.
So let me – is there another document? Because MORs can be hard to read.
They are hard.
There's a young lady raising her hand.
That's – she prepares them. She knows, and she knows the bank account numbers as well. She keeps the books.
All right.
And not the CPA, but
yes, ma'am.
Come on, Pam.
No.
Hold on. Don't talk until you.
No. Come on up.
You got to get on the mics.
Yes.
If you talk, it doesn't get recorded. So.
Yes, ma'am.
We generate
it. Tell him your name first.
My name is Pam Parks. I'm the office manager for Garden Oaks Maintenance Organization.
Okay.
And we prepare financial documents monthly, and we also are now preparing the MOR.
Okay.
And we post quarterly our balance sheets and P&L. I could begin posting that every month if there is a desire to see that, but I'm acutely aware that that number does not get the neighborhood to where it wants to understand, because are we paying $0 in legal costs, or are we paying $400,000? We don't.
I don't want to talk for Ms. Schmidt, but the questions that everyone's pushing for is what's going to be left over for the creditors,
mm-hmm.
which is a legitimate question,
sure.
legitimate question. And that's what we're working on, and everyone says, well, what are your attorney's fees? Well, we don't know, but right now I've accrued about $70,000. I mean, I can...
And the committee
and the committee is accrued...
Is what, two something?
It's one. It was 160 for the first 8 months.
No, that includes
through today, you know.
I don't have it for today.
Yeah, so
Ms. Schmidt, here's the best I'm going to be able to do. If you think that getting current monthly is helpful, I mean, you've heard the offer to make that available monthly as opposed to quarterly.
I do think that is. If I'm correct,
uh-huh.
the committee had put in their agreement with Charles that he would update on a monthly or quarterly or something, that he would provide documentation.
We ought to be sending the committee a copy of his bill.
And he was. As long as I was there, he was doing that. So it was never something that we weren't aware of. So all I was asking for, and in fact one of the board members had put on Facebook when we're having our discussions, that they would look into it. But I have repeatedly asked for the expenses on the board side and have not obtained that.
Let me ask you, so if we get the current financials posted on a monthly basis, I assume you can just post them on the website. Is that the practice?
Mm-hmm.
So if you do that on a monthly basis until we figure out where we're going, I would greatly appreciate that.
I think that would be wonderful.
Now, with respect to the legal fees, so I don't have any idea how to tell you how to gauge that. If you haven't figured out, I haven't been terrifically happy with the way that this has been run. And so I don't know what I'm going to do. But I'm going to do it in hindsight so that I have the benefit of my hindsight as well as the benefit of the hindsight of the people who are affected most, such as yourself. You know, there'll be a day when I deal with those fee applications and everyone has the right to come in and say, it's too much and here's why. Or it's not enough, they should have more. I mean, I've never heard that yet, but I guess it's possible. But I, you know, that's something that I do every day. I do literally hundreds of those in a year. It's just,
well, I think the approach that was taken on the case prior to that was about Mr. Patterson's fees, where you were saying it's subject to the approval of the judge or the court or whatever.
Yeah.
That's clear language everyone can understand.
Yeah, and that's actually the bankruptcy code. That's not Jones's rule. That's what the code says has to be done. And it's meant to give transparency to the process.
Right. And I think even if that needed to be posted on the website, then that, you know, as clarification that this isn't the final say-so, then that's up to y'all.
But. No, fair enough. Do the monthly financials contain an asterisk that says this does not include any legal cost associated with the bankruptcy? And if not, could I ask you to put that asterisk in?
No, they don't. Yeah. These are QuickBook generated reports, but we can put a statement of that right above it.
That'd be terrific.
Yeah, we do that.
All right.
I appreciate that. That'll help you? Yes,
right.
Very
Thank
much.
Thank you, ma'am. All right.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, sir. Everybody, if you want to say something, come on up.
Gary Ingram, I'm on the committee.
Yes, sir.
I'd kind of like to take us back to this deemed approval concept and just understand, maybe you can help us understand on the committee and on the board. You know, I don't think it's a question of can we do it legally. I think it's more of a question of should we do it in this neighborhood, when it would appear there seems to be a method that you could go out and do it under the Texas Property Code, seek affirmative, you know, not deemed approval, with a bit of work. And, I mean, I think all of us are willing to put in that work.
Here's the issue. Yeah. What did I start with Mr. Rubio? Is do you want to? And
yes.
Now that's my vernacular.
Yeah.
But that's what I really, you got to decide if you want to.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to, none of the rest of it matters.
And I think I'll just express my own opinion here that, you know, that this is a neighborhood that deserves the opportunity to affirmatively vote on whether or not these deed restrictions take place. And they're unnecessary to get out of this bankruptcy.
Yeah.
So I'll just leave it at that.
No, I got that, yeah. And I leave that up to you. I am never going to say you have to do this or you don't have to do that when it comes to those issues. The issue is what's right for people. You know, do I have my own view? Of course I do, because, you know, I've done this, and I know the pitfalls, both plus and minus, and there's some of each. But you all just need to decide. Again, I'm going to look at this and say, you know, I'm going to pick up my red book and I'm going to go, it either complies with the code or it doesn't. Do you have enough votes or don't you? And I'm going to say at the end of the day, yay or nay.
Right.
But, you know, you all first got to decide. I mean, that's been one of the big problems all along is, you know, this is Jones hypothecating, and I probably shouldn't do it, but I'll do it anyway. Is there's never been a clear direction. There have been a lot of opinions, but there's never been, and I'm going to change what I said, there's never been a clear legal direction. Everybody has their views, and everybody says, we ought to do this, we ought to do that, and I got all that. But in order to make things work, you have to have a very clear legal strategy. You know, to the extent that there was one on both sides, I didn't like either one of them. But again, I can be wrong.
I think if anything, this is not an ambiguous sort of circumstance for this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're on the committee. I mean, you need to decide what you want to do. And then, you know, you've obviously got statutory duties that you need to follow. And then you need to go about a process that works. I mean, again, there's so many pluses and minuses to this. I mean, it's, you know, I live in a neighborhood with an HOA, and I watch people, you know, bicker and fight, and you know, some of the discussions are good.
Mm.
Some of them are absolutely just silly. And, you know, hopefully at the end of the day, reasonable minds come together and you end up doing what's right. Doesn't always happen. But I get it. I understand the struggle that you go through. You're in a no-win position because you will never get 100% of anything, and there's always going to be someone who blames you. All I can say is, welcome to my world every day.
Yeah,
but again, you need to decide what you want to do and then go figure out the right strategy to get there.
I mean, I will also say I think we're all in agreement that going out with two plans will confuse the hell out of the neighborhood.
It's and a horrible it's a bad idea. It's just a horrible right? idea.
But I would like to revisit that we seem to be marrying the two plans in the disclosure statement now and moving on to the next hearing. Mm-hmm. I mean, our plan's been sitting now for some time on the docket, amended before the last hearing. This hearing was sort of set up to be the hearing where we decided one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of, and I think I'm speaking for a lot of us, like it feels like we just keep kicking the can down the road, right?
Were you listening?
Yeah.
The lawyers asked me for another hearing.
I know, yeah, I agree. So it's up to us to put the pressure on the lawyers
to make this happen. That's exactly right. Because right. I'm going to honor their request,
yeah,
absent somebody telling me not to. But if I got two lawyers that says we'd like a little more time to figure out where we're going, I mean, I'm going to give that. I know both these guys, and while some people will think I've been critical of both of them, I like them both,
yeah.
And I think they both do a good job. Part of my job is, you know, I'm kind of like the ultimate cat herder. You know, I try to keep people headed in the right direction, and hopefully they come around to making the right decision at the end of the day. Because, you know, I can't tell them you will do a plan that says A, B, and C. All I can say at the end of the day is, you know, it either meets the code or it doesn't.
Okay.
All right?
But just for my own edification, it's not a necessity to go. Do you feel it's a necessity if we went with two plans that they have to go together or one before the other? Or is that a decision for another day?
Well, I tell you this. If, given where we are, Do they have to go together? No, they don't. But you want to talk about, you know, let's say that we've spent $300,000. I mean, I'm just making up a number. You want to make this really complicated
and
have multiple plans, multiple disclosure statements, and you're going to start paying at double the rate. And, you know, this needs to get done.
It's an administrative burden.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would hope that we would find something that just makes sense. It also bothers me, you know, the statement that Ms. Schmidt said that, you know, nobody could read it. I mean, you know, people ought to be able to look. And, you know, one of the things that, again, see, now I'm talking to the lawyers. You know, one of the things that I used to do a lot when I had complicated plans going to people who weren't, it's going to sound horrible, and I don't mean this the way it's going to sound, who weren't bankruptcy sophisticated, was, you know, I used to put like little 3-4 page summary. And, you know, people would call me up and they would ask me questions about the summary. No one ever called me about a question about the thick document. Because I've been around a long time. People don't read it.
Yeah.
It becomes one of those things you stick under the door so it won't slam shut, or you use it to start fires in the winter. I mean, I got all of that.
Or turn it over and use it as scratch paper.
Exactly.
On the blank sign.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you'll laugh at that again. Yeah, I know it's 10 after 7. It's I have a lake house up in Cold Spring, so I spend a lot of time there because I like the water and it's nice. But that's a rural area. And so I was talking to one of my neighbors who's a school teacher, and she said, you know, she says, we need scrap paper for all of the math students. And so I said, how much you need? And she said, boy, I could really use like a box. And I said, only one? She goes, you know, if I could get two, I'd really be appreciative. So we took scrap plans that people, you know, leave in the courtroom, and we cut it into quarters, and I delivered 20 boxes of scrap paper up there. They were all quartered so that the math students could, you know, practice their craft on the back of it. So I that was a long-winded way of going, I get it.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll find something practical.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate your patience with us. Hopefully we get there.
And let's get something done good for everybody. Yes, sir. Come on up. Yes, sir.
I'm Peter Chang. I'm the member of the committee.
Yes, sir.
I just have two concerns I want to bring to you.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I know you give both lawyers instruction as to how you can tally the vote in such a way that new deed restrictions that is usually has to undergo the scrutiny of Texas Property Code can be confirmed through the bankruptcy code. You use Chapter 9 and whatnot as an example. I just want you to perhaps instruct both lawyers that if you were to come out with a joint plan, that perhaps you do not use a no vote, a absent no vote, as a confirmation to be considered as a yes vote. For example, last time when Gomo sent out a ballot, about 30% of people voted.
Uh-huh.
Only 30%, 70% didn't vote. So I don't want either lawyer to use that 70% as a gateway to confirm a vote, to confirm a vote.
Well, okay, you need to draw a distinction. And I know you're a really smart guy, and if I'm going over something you already understand, please tell me to stop. There's a huge difference in voting and consent. They are two separate issues. Voting is covered by the code, and a failure to vote can't be construed as anything other than a failure to vote. A consent is an entirely different issue. They are two concepts, and you can't take a voting ballot and have it count as consent. Can't do it. A consent is something very different than a voting ballot. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
So perhaps my wording is incorrect. I don't want to use the lack of consent and to be use that to interpret it as a for. For the consent.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that is using the apathy of the community to its advantage, and
I got it.
That's unfair.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, under some circumstances it can. But you're the committee. I mean, you're the one who's deciding what you want to do.
I understand that, and it would be nice if I can work with Gomo closely, with mutual respect, to come up with a mutual plan. That's what everybody wants. I think we've been dragging this for a long time.
Yeah.
I myself been personally involved for 6 years. I want this to end. I think everybody and everyone wants this to end. The damage that's been done will take decades to heal.
Yeah, I got it.
But I tried to work with Gomo. I invited them to come to my house and talk face to face a couple times. But when you hear phrases such as, oh, you know what, I'm 99.99% sure that Judge Jones will find Gomo to be formed properly, you know, the type of arrogance that I encountered doesn't help.
You know, I have to live with that every day. People always think they know what's inside my head. And, you know, I told you I was about 95% confident, and that was as high as it ever goes. I was wrong. I'm 100% confident that no one in this courtroom knows what's inside my head. I got game that nobody in here can figure out, if you understand that. And I haven't yet begun to show it. So I'm letting you do your thing. You got to live. You know, some people are just going to be arrogant. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that.
But I try. I mean, not just a one-time incident. There's multiple incidents.
Yeah. I can't make people be reasonable.
So
I can make people want to be reasonable.
I just want you to know that I personally, I'm trying, but to say, you know, hey, this is my concern. And I said, oh, bring it. Bring it to the court. Let's see what Jones has to say.
Yeah.
That doesn't help.
To
say, you know, this might, you know, and, you know, to meet them and they say, what do you want, Peter? You're the one that called for the meeting. That doesn't help. So for us to expect these two lawyers to come up with a joint plan, it's impossible. It is. I mean, I tried, and I just don't see that happening. That's why we kind of need your guidance to do cobbles and strike in a way.
Fair enough.
So this can end. Otherwise, this will never end.
Yeah,
we thought we would have a plan last time. Yeah. To go out and nothing happens.
Let me give you one assurance. It's going to end. People may not like how it's going to end, but if you all, I've left this in your collective hands. And I remember talking to you early on in the case, and I urged you to be a champion for resolution. And I'll accept that you've tried. I want everybody to hear. I've left this in your hands. If I take it away from you, I promise you I can bring this to an end, and it won't be a plan. I don't need a plan. I don't need your vote. I can bring it to an end, and no one will like it. But I don't want to do that. I want to see you operate as a community and find a way to get there. But I got it. My suggestion to you is, you said you don't think two lawyers can put together a plan. Sure they can. Yeah. I've written plans before that tens of thousands of people had to agree to. I didn't go talk to any of them. I just knew what was right. So I'm hoping that they will do the same thing. But if not, at some point, I promise you I will bring an end to it, because I can. It's just not going to be a fun end. I want an end that people are proud of.
Thank you.
Got it? All right. Thank you. All right. Folks, anything else? Mr. Patterson?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Rubio?
No, Your
Honor. All right, so we've got a reset hearing date. You guys got a problem. You need to go figure out how to fix it.
We do.
All right.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Everybody, safe travels home, and I'm sorry for having kept you so long.